If you're listening to the show on iTunes, please give it a rating. I would love to hear your feedback on there, and yeah, it helps the show out quite a bit. Hey, thanks a lot.
This is the Cascade Hiker Podcast. You're going to find out all the aspects of hiking in our beautiful Pacific Northwest woods.
I'm a country boy with a soft side. My heart wanders up north to the hillside. And I've never met anyone quite as beautiful as you.
Check us out over at CascadeHikerPodcast.com. That's right, CascadeHikerPodcast.com. That's where you're going to find all the show notes and links right there.
Enigmatic like that of the cosmos. Never held your hand.
I want to thank Whiskey Fever for letting me use that awesome track there. That was Tall Grass off their album Gonna Wake Up This Whole Town. Find them at ReverbNation.com/Whiskey Fever. They're from Cedro Woolley. Go check them out. I'm your host, Rudy Getzik. I put this podcast together to inspire you to get out on the trail. Are you putting in 2-mile hikes, 5-mile hikes? You sitting on the couch? Have you even gone on a backpacking trip yet? I'm going to introduce you to some folks that have done that and a whole lot more. So without further ado, here is the Cascade Hiker Podcast. Okay, next on the Cascade Hiker Podcast, what's your name and where are you from?
My name is Katie Daly. I'm from Birdsview, Washington.
Birdsview, Washington. Awesome. All right. First off, how old are you?
I'm 17.
17. Wow. And you hiked a pretty big trail this summer, the Camino de Santiago. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah. So, yeah, I did the Camino de Santiago just about a month ago.
Wow. And how did you decide to do that? It's huge.
Well, my mom and I have always talked about traveling, and she had a friend from high school who actually, he had a degenerative disease that, made him paraplegic, and he has traveled and done all this stuff. And a couple of years ago at their high school reunion, he decided to do the Camino. It was the first time my mom and I had ever heard of it. And he did it in a wheelchair. His name is Justin Skisik and Patrick Gray. There's actually a documentary coming out called I'll Push You. Justin is the guy who's in the wheelchair, and his friend Patrick Gray pushed him the whole 500 miles. So after hearing that, that just kind of inspired my mom and I, because we decided if he can do that, then we definitely can. So.
Yeah, no kidding. Wow, that's huge. 500 miles. And yes. Yeah, do you think, so is he able to do him, like, proceed himself at all, or is that 100% pushing?
When I met him, he was still able to move his arms and use them. But no, he was a full quadriplegic at the time that he did the Camino. So it was all pushing. He was in this wheelchair that kind of looked like a giant jogger stroller, sort of.
Yeah.
So it could navigate like the trail and the terrain. And there's pictures of like 20 people all with things strapped to the wheelchair pulling him like up mountains. So it was definitely just random people from the Camino that helped him all along the way. So.
Wow, that's quite an inspiration.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing, and it was cool to follow in the footsteps after seeing the pictures of him doing it the year before, like just imagining doing that in a wheelchair when we were struggling just to get through it ourselves.
Yeah, and I guess we didn't really cover it. Where exactly is the Camino de Santiago?
So it's in Spain. There's multiple Caminos. Camino just means the way in Spanish, so it's the way of St. James. And this, we did the Camino Francés. So it started in Saint Jean Pied de Port, which is in France, and covered 780 kilometers across northern Spain.
Wow, that's cool.
So, yeah.
This summer, why this summer?
So I just graduated high school, and with my associate's degree, I did full-time Running Start at Skagit Valley College. So it was just sort of a My mom's never traveled to Europe before, and neither have I.
Yeah.
And something we've talked about. So it was kind of a graduation trip slash mother-daughter bonding trip, kind of all pooled together.
That just sounds so cool. So did you do any hiking, like in the North Cascades, as growing up?
Definitely. It's funny, people always ask, like, where have you hiked? But, I mean, everywhere. It's so accessible. We've done Sauk Mountain, Mount Pilchuck, all over the Cascades. Yeah, but never backpacking. I've never actually backpacked.
Really?
So that was a first. Yeah, yeah.
So never, like, continuous day-after-day hiking?
No.
Wow.
I've hiked days in a row, but never as a, nothing like that. Nothing like the Camino.
Yeah. I assume your mom probably had though, right?
Yes. Yeah. She backpacked a lot in college but it's just never something we've done together.
Wow. That's really, this is such a cool trip. So what's the history behind the trail?
Well, actually, it's funny because most of the time that I was on the Camino, I actually didn't know much about the history of it. It wasn't until the end that I decided to kind of look into it. And I know that it's an ancient pilgrimage. It's the Way of St. James, which is in Spanish, the Camino de Santiago. It's a Christian pilgrimage that's existed forever, for over 1,000 years. And people used to do it because it was considered one of the three pilgrimages in the world, which, like, all your sins could be forgiven if you walked this way, and ended up in Santiago de Compostela, which is where we walked today, at this huge church. It's pretty amazing.
Wow. Well, it's understandable that you didn't really look into the history too much before you left, because you were inspired not because of the history, but because of the person that you knew.
Yeah, exactly.
Were there some items that you needed to buy specifically for this hike? Since you had never backpacked, so.
No, we kind of started from scratch. We had to buy backpacks, and we got sleeping liners, because since we hiked it in the summer, we didn't need sleeping bags, really. It was warm enough. We kept our weight pretty minimal. We didn't have to camp on the Camino because the way is so well established that there are these things called albergues all along the way. They're extremely cheap hostel kind of backpacker. They're only for pilgrims on the Camino. So that eliminated a lot of stuff that we would have had to have gotten. But yeah,
it's a big deal.
Shoes, which failed, and I ended up walking not the whole way in my brand new fast hiking shoes that I bought and had broken in for 6 months. I ended up walking the whole way in Keen sandals and socks.
Oh no.
Which was, they were my backup pair of shoes, but I walked the whole way in those. Just all sorts of little minimal things along
the way. That you needed. It's a big deal to go from not backpacking at all and then all of a sudden thrown into it like that. So,
yeah.
So the liners then, so you would get to these hostels and so you would use that so you're not touching, like, weird stuff.
Yeah. We sprayed everything with bed bug, like, preventative bed bug spray, because that's one of the big things. It's all these, like, there's churches, donativos, which are just by donation. There's such a wide range of places, but because there's people, so many people sleeping in them every night, we needed something.
Yeah. Double protection.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Cool. No, that's good. If you're listening to the show on iTunes, please give it a rating. I would love to hear your feedback on there, and yeah, it helps the show out quite a bit. Hey, thanks a lot.
Listeners, I got you a deal at Rivertime Brewery in Darrington, Washington. That's right.
Tell them Cascade Hiker Podcast sent you, and you get $1 off your first pint. If you're up there hiking or just driving through town, stop in and tell them Cascade Hiker Podcast sent you. They just won the bronze medal at the Washington Beer Awards for their Scottish beer. So after a hike, enjoy a pint. And their slogan says, beer at an appropriate pace. Rivertop Brewery is located in downtown Darrington, Washington, in the old City Hall building there. Can't miss it. So next time you're in there, remember, don't forget to tell them the Cascade Hiker Podcast sent you and get that $1 off the first pint. Of course, you got to be over 21.
So speaking of your shoes then, so how did your feet hold up?
It was rough. We kept, my mom and I kept blister counts, and I ended up getting 15 blisters. And some of them were just kind of permanent, but besides blisters, which everybody had a problem with, there was just this general pain after walking like 8 hours a day, every day, back to back and on these rocks. And my mom always said, like, when she took her shoes off in the evening, she expected them to be like black and blue and just totally bruised. And they look fine, but just so sore.
That's the way they felt, though. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think a lot of backpackers, you know, on all kinds of different trails can relate to that for sure.
I can imagine. Yeah.
So then how about your legs then? Same thing, or was that, did that get better with time?
It got better. It was just with the change in terrain. It started off, the very first day you hike over the Pyrenees mountains, and it's a hard day. It's a lot of up, and that whole, the first week is lots of hills and up and down. And it isn't until you get into the Meseta where it's just kind of, it's mostly flat. Which was kind of a relief, but it just kind of depended on the terrain. You'd get used to one thing, and then it would throw something else at you, and there was always something. Yeah. There's always something.
Well, it's easier for your legs to kind of get used to it, but your feet, that's something that sometimes not easy to get used to.
Yeah.
So what about a typical day on the Camino? How does that look?
Well, most people get up at about 6. Some people will get up at 5 or 4:30 in the morning to beat the heat. But we generally got up between like 6 and 7 and kind of ate a quick thing, usually slept in our clothes, that we were going to wear the next day. And we'd walk about a couple of hours, and then there's kind of this thing that everybody ends up doing, called second breakfast. Because when you get up in the morning, you just eat like a bar or a yogurt or something that you just have left over in your backpack. And second breakfast is always where it's like the first stop of the day. And usually it's at a bar. Most of the little tiny restaurants in these villages were called bars. And you'd get a coffee and a tortilla, which is this potato egg thing. That we ate a lot of. Lots of tortillas and lots of toast.
Huh.
That's a typical breakfast, was just toast and tortilla. And then just kind of keep walking through the day. There's so many people along the trail that you just kind of meet people all day, and sometimes walk with people and talk, and sometimes you're just alone. And sometimes those were the best moments, where you're just kind of walking in silence. And then you, depending on the day, because it would range from like, I think our shortest day was 4.5 hours, but that was a really flat, really flat day. And our longest was 8 or 9 hours, I think. So it just kind of depended, and we'd get into town, the village. I mean, there was some days that we were in a big city like Burgos, and there were some days that we were in a tiny remote village with like three houses and an albergue and a tiny little cafe. Like, it just depended on where we were at. But by the time we got to the end, we across the board, most people really liked the small remote villages the most, because it's such a cool experience to feel so disconnected from what seems like just like what's normal.
Well, yeah, so like if a regular tourist was to fly into Spain, and they're not going to ever see those villages that you did.
No, like one morning we were in Galicia, which is the last region of the Camino that you walk through, and we walked out of town with an old lady walking her cows through the village, like just herding her cows through the one street that went through the village, and here we were with 10 other pilgrims who just had to follow behind the cows because that was the only way out. And that was one of those really cool moments.
Wow. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. Just kind of integrated right into the community.
Yeah.
Cool. What about for lunch then? Are there bars along the way for lunch also, or?
Yeah, there's, well, through most of the beginning and the end, there were plenty of towns and villages that we walked through that you could stop, or you'd get groceries in the morning and carry food with you, like lots of bread and cheese and meats and grapes and just kind of sort of, and sandwiches and just things put together. And bocadillos, which like everywhere you look, there's bocadillos and there's jamón y queso and tortilla bocadillos, and which are like these sandwiches just kind of in this big, huge bread, lots of bread.
Well, you're talking about a lot of, the local menus. Have you craved anything like that since you left?
You know, there's been one time where when we were hiking after we got back, my brain kind of went to like, where can I get a bocadillo? Like it hasn't been cravings so much as like these things that just were so necessary and like things that I needed so much. Now my brain will resort to those things. But I kind of wore myself out on the tortillas and the paella and yeah, kind of the same foods for a month. Yeah.
Man, that's crazy. Well, how were the water sources along the way?
Water was super accessible. All we had to do was really carry a water bottle. Most people didn't carry bladders in their backpacks. You could find it all throughout the day in most places. Some days, you could look ahead at the next day and see that there wasn't a place to stop for a while. So you'd know, like, you need to bring more water, or you just need to be aware of how much you're using. But it was really cool. A lot of times the water sources came from water fountains, like in town squares. And in the United States, the water fountains they'd seem more decorative. It would be considered like a decorative water fountain, but there you could just fill your water bottle up in it. It was kind of cool just walking through town in this beautiful sculpture fountain and just getting to put your water bottle in it.
Wow. Yeah. That's way different.
Yeah.
There wasn't like a bunch of wishing coins in the bottom.
Nope. Not generally. No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny. So that's cool. So yeah, and were some of them just maybe at like where you're staying and stuff at the hostels?
At the hostels, people, when you go into the bar, you can ask them to fill your water bottle. It was never a concern.
Nice.
Yeah.
Oh, that's good. Well, now that you've completed the trail, what does it mean to you?
It's overwhelming to think about everything that we accomplished in that month. I've had so many people ask me since we've got back, like, how was it? Like, what, like, just How to sum up the entire month of walking the Camino and the entire experience in just a few words has been such a hard thing to do, because it was an amazing thing to do with my mom, and to kind of overcome all of the struggles that the Camino presented with her, and learning how to kind of take care of some of those things on my own. The Camino kind of taught me to be a little more self-sufficient and to pay a little more attention to self-care. because my very first day, I didn't wear sunscreen. I put it on once in the morning, and I ended up walking the next week with a painful sunburn. So, I mean, it's just little things like that. That just lots of little lessons. That don't seem so important by themselves, but in those situations, it's just it means so much.
Well, I tell you, I know for your mom, it's probably a lot different because she's more probably closer to my age. But I know, you know, thinking about my grandparents and my mom and whatnot, you know, my wife, my kids, you know, the generations, and you think, man, your whole life you're going to be thinking about this. You know, I would think that as you grow older and wherever your life takes you, you know, that's something that's a story you can always tell, and not too many people could tell that story.
Definitely, it's something that'll be really special for both of us forever. And I know that this trip has inspired my mom to want to keep traveling and keep going out into the world, because she never did that when she was my age. And so the fact that she shared that with me now, I could just appreciate it so much more, because seeing her experience it for the first time at her age, while she's sharing that experience with me, was pretty incredible.
Yeah, that's cool. Well, you said you saw a lot of people on the trail. Describe them. You know, the other pilgrims, you know, who were they?
Some of the most incredible people I think I've ever met. There were lots of Americans on the Camino, actually. I expected Americans, but we found out later on that it was a kind of a slow year for the Camino compared to past years. There were less people walking it than there usually was that time of year, but more Americans than there usually is. Well, the first week and a half, we walked with a group of a couple Americans, a Dane, and we called them our boys, because there's Jack from Buffalo and Tommy from New York City, and Julie, also from Buffalo, which we met both of them in the first 2 days separately, and found out that they were both from Buffalo and they hadn't met each other, and kind of introduced them to each other. And it was crazy. Like, they've grown up close to each other, like living in the same area as each other their whole lives, and it takes going to Spain and walking the Camino for them to meet.
That is crazy.
Yeah. And a German named Steve, who we actually met when we arrived in St. Jean, where we started. We rode into town with him in this van service, and he ended up being like the most popular guy on the Camino, because he was just the cutest guy, and we all had these little stories about Steve and how funny he was, and all the people's stories of why they were walking the Camino and how they got there. It was just really inspiring to see these people, and most of them were in their 20s. And for me, I thought it was really inspiring to see all these people doing this and where they came from. Julie had just come home from the being in the Peace Corps for 3 years in the Dominican Republic, teaching ESL, and Jack from Buffalo had just been teaching English in Madrid, and has done a documentary on the PCT and has walked it. And Tommy from New York City, he's traveled all over, and just, it was just really cool. I feel really lucky at my age to see, like, to be doing it. Because there were people with their families and little kids kind of for certain parts of the Camino. But seeing these people that were older than me doing this, and it was just really inspiring.
That's great. Yeah. And, you know, I hear that from a lot of the long distance trails, just, you know, best people out there. I know a lot of the people I've met along the way are just the coolest people, easy going. So,
yeah, there's just, it takes a certain kind of person to commit a month of their life to dropping everything they had going on to go walk this. And so even if you don't have a whole lot in common, just having that one thing in common and being able to kind of share the struggles of every day together, like everybody's feet hurt. Everybody's bodies hurt. Everybody is going through the same thing.
Yeah, a lot of the same concerns and whatnot.
Yeah, lots of bonding, lots of foot care bonding. And we'd, some of the albergues had kitchens, a lot of them did. So some nights when we were tired of the same food over and over, the same pilgrim meals, which is lots of French fries and kind of mediocre meats, and we'd all cook together. And those were some of the coolest memories I have. Some of the most special memories were cooking with this group of people. They were like family.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. If you're listening to the show on iTunes, please give it a rating. I would love to hear your feedback on there, and yeah, it helps the show out quite a bit. Hey, thanks a lot.
Listeners, I got you a deal at Rivertime Brewery in Darrington, Washington. That's right. Tell them Cascade Hiker Podcast sent you, and you get $1 off your first pint. If you're up there hiking or just driving through town, stop in and tell them Cascade Hiker Podcast sent you. They just won the bronze medal at the Washington Beer Awards for their Scottish beer. So after a hike, enjoy a pint. And their slogan says, beer at an appropriate pace. Rivertime Brewery is located in downtown Darrington, Washington, in the old City Hall building there. Can't miss it. So next time you're in there, remember, don't forget to tell them the Cascade Hiker Podcast sent you and get that $1 off the first pint. Of course, you got to be over 21.
Well, did you keep in contact with anybody? Make any friendships out there?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I actually made a Facebook while I was on the Camino, because I haven't had one for years, and most people I met did. So I've networked with most of the people that I met or talked to. I have a girl, she was 19, and I met her kind of the last 2 weeks of the Camino. She's German, and we've talked. She's going into college, or she's starting college in a couple months, and so am I, and we've been able to connect through that, and just everybody. It's hard to just kind of walk away from those people, because we kind of lived with them for a month.
Oh, for sure. Well, and it's, you know, you mentioned social media. I mean, it's such an easy way to communicate with people that live so far away.
Yeah, it's been great. It's been awesome being able to see what they're doing, and seeing just the other day, Julie and Jack from Buffalo were together, and they were hiking and posting pictures talking about like having a little piece of the Camino close. It's been really cool. Definitely, I definitely people that I know I'll see again in my life. And people who, like, we made a couple friends from Denmark, and I have a friend in Germany now. The Camino has kind of opened all these doors to places all over the world and inviting people to come stay with us. Like, next time you're like, you should come visit America, come visit us sometime. We'll show you around the North Cascades. And people saying, well, next time you're in Europe, come to Denmark and you can stay with me and I'll show you around. And it's really cool.
Yeah, I like the way you worded that. Opened all the doors.
Yeah.
It's cool. Yeah, I mean, that's really what it is, right? I mean, because when you see somebody, maybe you randomly meet somebody, let's say online, and you say, oh, well, yeah, I don't know if I really want to meet that person, but man, you've already met these people. It's already established. So.
Yeah, it's a fast, you form bonds quickly, like within a week of knowing, or just a few days of knowing some of these people, you feel so close and like you've known this person forever and you know that you can trust them. It's like this unspoken bond that is really cool.
That is cool. Well, you know, one thing I've always kind of thought of with the hiking community in general is just, you know, we're all out there for the same reason. It's not to, you hear a lot of people say, oh, well, this could happen out there or that could happen out there. And it's like, well, you know what? I'm out there for this. I'm pretty sure 99.9% of the other people are out there for that also. And especially after you get to know them, right?
Yeah. And that's one thing with the Camino. At the end, when you're getting your Compostela, your certificate saying that you completed it, they ask you actually in the office, they ask you, what was your reason for doing the Camino? Was it religious? Was it spiritual? Was it for sport? And a lot of people that I met and talked to were doing it because they were at some crossroads or just needed a new perspective. And even if people weren't walking it for the Christian principle of the pilgrimage, it was very spiritual for a lot of people, for most people, I think, just sort of this finding yourself journey. That's just so life changing.
Right. That's good. Well, so now that you're done and you're definitely a young adult, 17, are you recommending this to other people then?
I would absolutely recommend this to people, but it's sort of, I want to tell everyone that they need to do it because it's sort of like this, you don't know what you need or what you need to get out of it, or even that you really like after walking the Camino, I don't feel like a whole new person or completely changed or anything that dramatic or monumental, but it gives you a new perspective on a lot of things. And there's a saying on the Camino that is so true that you kind of hear before and it seems kind of cheesy, but the Camino provides. And when you're in the middle of that, it really does, and it provides in so many ways. And when you need something, there's somebody there to give it to you. And I think everybody should experience that in their life. But I guess it has to be only if you want to, and only if you're open to that. But I would recommend it to anybody.
Well, I hear about a lot of people saying, oh, I'm going to go backpack Europe. And I think your whole life, last 20 years or so, it's kind of become like I want to go town to town, like the major towns, and I want to act like I'm backpacking and more or less want to party and meet people that way. This is really backpacking Europe, right?
I think so. It's a true backpacker's experience, and I know people and some of the people on the Camino have backpacked in the Northwest and kind of Northwest backpackers. And they're all the same kind of people. the same, like you were saying before, when you go out there, you know that everybody, 99% of the people are out there for the same reasons. And that's what it is. I don't know how to describe it.
You don't have to.
Yeah. Yeah.
So what about kids that want to hike by themselves? You know, maybe, women, I mean, did it seem safe?
It was, I felt completely safe, the whole time. And actually most of the people we met were walking it by themselves. And I would say, other than it being my first time doing anything like that or traveling out of the country like that, I've been to Canada, but that doesn't really count. I feel completely safe, and I definitely feel like I could do that on my own. I could go back and do that on my own for sure. And you're so close to so many other people that you're never really completely alone. You could walk alone sometimes, but yeah, it's definitely doable and safe for somebody my age to do on their own. As long as you have common sense and feel confident enough doing something like that, yeah, it's definitely doable.
Yeah, I like the common sense in there. What's that? Yeah, that's good. That's good to have common sense.
Yeah.
Always. I think, you know, when I thought about that question, I really didn't think about the whole traveling to France or Spain. I mean, that's a big deal right there, right? For especially, you know, say another 17-year-old, anybody to go travel over there. That's a big step.
Yeah, it's far from home.
Yeah.
It's definitely far from home, and there's some things that are different, and some things with the language that makes things a little more complicated. But any time that anything seemed kind of complicated, it was just, if you were just patient and sort of just resourceful, and you could just figure anything out, transportation and where to stay and getting what you need, and yeah.
Cool. So is this your big last big hiking adventure of this size, or do you have your heart set on something else now, maybe closer to home?
I have my heart set. Well, first of all, I think that I will definitely do Walk the Camino again.
Really?
And I think if I do, yeah. I think if I do it again, I'll do it alone, or I'd like to do it like with my kids, like be able to share that experience with them. Definitely no time, not anytime soon, because there's so much I want to see before I just, like, repeat the same trip. But right now I kind of have my heart set on walking the PCT sometime. Not sure when, haven't gotten that far into planning of it, but meeting Jack from Buffalo, who has walked part of it, I've kind of talked to him since I've been home. Watched the documentary. It's called Run for Colin, that he was a part of creating, about his friend who set the record for running the PCT, the entire PCT in 54 days, in memory of his cousin, who died of cancer when he was 2. So I watched that documentary when I got home because meeting him, and he told me to watch it. And it's since then I've just sort of felt inspired to do it, whether I do it a state, do just one portion of it, or just a state at a time. It's on my list.
That's good. Yeah. I recently got up to the border, the Canadian border, and back from Highway 20. And I met a gal that was probably about your age. She might have been closer to 20. I'm not really sure exactly. But, yeah, her dad was hiking with her and sending her off to finish Washington by herself. So it was kind of cool.
That's really cool.
It's fun seeing people do that. You know, it's a fun trail that we have right here in our backyard, but it's also really neat to hear that you want to go back to Camino again, possibly even if you have kids. And
yeah, and there's also, I learned as we were walking, the Camino that we walked was only one of multiple Caminos that you can do. It's just, there's all sorts of, all different paths that lead to Santiago de Compostela, which is where you end. And there's a Portugal Camino, an Irish Camino. The list goes on and on. There's another Camino in Spain that you can do. The Camino Francés is the most popular. So that's another option that I've kind of thought about. If I want to go back and do it, I could do a different stretch of it.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Well, and you know, if you broke the PCT up into 500 mile segments, I mean, that'd only be what, five plus trips.
Yeah. Yep.
So you were in Europe for the summer. Did you hike the trail and come straight home, or did you guys have a chance to do anything else over there?
We crammed a little quick European tour in after in 2 weeks after we finished. We finished in Santiago, and then we spent a couple days in Finisterre, which is the original Camino. Most of the time it was, people would finish there. It's the coast. It's like the furthest point of Spain, and it used to be considered the end of the world.
When that was, yeah, when Europe was it was the whole world.
Yeah, exactly. So we got to spend a couple days there, which was really cool. And then from there, we took a plane and then a train to Cinque Terre, Italy, which was beautiful on the coast, the stacked colored houses all along the water. And we just kind of got a couple days to decompress and relax on the beach. Huh. And then from there, we went to Switzerland. We stayed in Interlaken in the Alps for a night, which was absolutely amazing. So breathtaking. The Alps are just incredible. And then two nights in Germany, one night in Cologne and one night in Bonn. We saw a castle and took a boat tour on the Rhine River. Yeah, so then we spent a couple nights in Amsterdam, which was cool. And then a night in Paris, which is where we flew in and were flying out of. And we actually got my phone pickpocketed in Paris. That was fun.
Oh, no.
Underneath the Eiffel Tower. It was the end of the trip, though, so it was fine. And then we just spent a day in London. We had like an 8-hour layover, so we took a bus tour through London between flights. And then home.
Oh, wow. You guys did get to be tourists then a little bit.
Yeah. And we still had our shells on our backpacks, which is kind of the symbol of the Camino. And there were a couple different cities that we were in that people pointed us out. In Paris, there was a guy from America who had just finished the Camino 2 weeks before we did. And he was also doing the same thing, just kind of touring through Europe.
Oh, cool.
Afterwards. And we ended up walking through Paris with a day talking about our Camino experiences. This was 2 weeks after we finished. He just ran after us and said, excuse me, I see your shell. Did you walk the Camino? And there's a German Camino. There's a German way. And we actually ended up, we were in Bonn, and there was a shell and a yellow arrow, which that's, the yellow arrows are, you kind of become so dependent on these yellow arrows that every day are pointing you in the direction, that are spray painted on walls and on rocks. And so we saw one and we were freaking out and taking a picture. And a guy stopped and saw our shells, and he's walked the. He was telling us in German, because we don't speak German, and he didn't really speak English, that he's walked the Camino, and he started tearing up and had these goosebumps, and was just like so excited that we had walked it, and it was just really cool. All throughout the rest of our 2 weeks in Europe, all these reminders and seeing how much it matters to all these people and how much it just keeps being such a part of your life.
Yeah. Wow. That's neat. So are you still walking around with the shell?
I'm not. No, but my mom just did a couple day backpacking trip from Marble Mount to Chelan.
Over Cascade Pass.
Yeah, over the Cascade Pass. And she put her shell on her. She has a bigger backpack. She put her shell on there and met a few people who had done the Camino on her trip over the Cascade Pass, which was really cool.
Wow. Well, that's a conversation piece.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, I do have one quick question. Did you guys, we were talking a little bit about some of the gear you had to buy. Did you guys use trekking poles?
We didn't bring trekking poles. We didn't think that we would need them. And then a couple weeks in, my mom decided she wanted some. And we were in a albergue and asking the hospitalero, the volunteer working there, where we can find a sports store, outdoor store to get some. And she brought us in her back little closet thing in the albergue and had a giant thing full of walking sticks and hiking poles and like this brand new set of hiking poles that she just gave to us.
Oh, wow.
So we ended up using them. I actually ended up using them more than my mom did. But it was nice. I liked using one. Two, I wasn't comfortable with, but we did end up using those.
Wow, that's cool. So you guys had kind of different gear than somebody would have on backpacking trips over here in the States. What did you consider like something that you just couldn't let go of, or what was your favorite piece of gear that you had over there?
My backpack.
Yeah.
For one thing. But I was more attached to kind of our care kit. We had a foot care kit that we kind of had all the, we had so much like thread for threading blisters and the stuff called Compede that you could get in Europe for blisters and like wraps and little toe sleeves so you don't lose, so to help you with going downhill and ramming your toes and the end of your shoes. And we were so attached to that.
That's a good answer. I like that.
We used it multiple times a day, every day. I'd say I was most dependent on the foot care kit.
You're describing it. I'm picturing like a huge plastic bag.
I mean, it was just this little Velcro bag thing. It wasn't very big, but it had everything we needed in it.
That's cool. What about books? Do you read much in the outdoor book, you know, genre?
I do. I read a lot. Not really in the outdoor genre. And I didn't actually bring any books with me because of the weight. But there's a Camino book, which we all kind of called the Bible, that most people had, by Brierley. We all kind of, everybody sort of cussed out Brierley one time or another because of his map proportions and philosophical advice. And but that was the only book that I brought and sort of depended on for a while and then just wanted to throw over the side of the mountain at the end.
Right. So what was it called now?
It's just called the Santiago de Compostela. It's by I think John Brierley. I think that's his first name.
Oh, okay, cool.
Brierley. It's, I think, one of the most popular Camino Bibles.
Nice. And one more time, what's the name of the movie that, or it was, is a movie, right, that your mom's friend's going to be putting out?
Oh, it's a documentary. It hasn't come out yet, but it's called I'll Push You.
Okay, yeah. I just wanted to plug that one more time. That's cool.
Yeah, and they have a Facebook page, which is really cool, that kind of talks about their journey. And there's a trailer for the documentary, which will make you bawl your eyes out. But, yeah, I definitely suggest anyone who's interested in traveling at all to watch it. Yeah.
Or just an emotional movie in general.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's probably better than the Charlie Sheen, Martin Sheen movie.
Yeah. So many people asked, so are you doing, when we were doing the Camino, are you doing it because you saw the movie? Which, the movie's made the Camino more popular for Americans.
Oh, really? Well, is it The Way? Is that what it's called? I can't remember.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's called The Way.
I haven't actually seen it, but I it's in my Netflix queue. So
my mom and I watched it after we had for sure decided that we were doing it and committed. We thought, well, we might as well watch this now.
Was it good? Yeah.
It was pretty good.
How about in hindsight? Now that you've done the trail,
it's definitely, it's not the same. It's not the same as the movie goes through the Camino so fast, obviously, in 2 hours you can't cover everything, but yeah.
Well, cool. I might recommend a book to you. I recently read Through Hiking Will Break Your Heart by Carrot Quinn. That's pretty good. And somebody that inspires to maybe hike the PCT like yourself might enjoy it.
I'll write down.
It's the THRU through hiking. So yeah, check it out. Last question. Do you listen to any hiking podcasts?
I don't. I just got into podcasts actually while I was on the Camino. It was kind of a good thing to listen to while you were walking.
And you didn't listen to any hiking ones?
No.
What were you listening to?
I listened to Serial.
Oh yeah.
There were some people that kind of, yeah, some people recommended it to us. Actually, a girl from London told us that we had to listen to it.
Oh, cool. Nice. Well, thanks for coming on the Cascade Hiker Podcast.
Yeah, thank you. It's great to share our trip.
Okay, that's the show. Thanks a lot for listening to the Cascade Hiker Podcast. Send me an email, Rudy@CascadeHikerPodcast.com. I love the feedback. Also, hit me up on Facebook. North Cascade Hiker is my Facebook page. Twitter, N_Cascade Hiking on Twitter. And Instagram is North_Cascade_Hiker. So pretty simple to find me on social media there. You could also just leave a comment under the show. So I try to give you plenty of ways to get a hold of me. Do so. I want to hear from you. Thanks again for listening to the Cascade Hiker Podcast. I would leave this world for a beautiful girl if I could just find you.